Hi, everyone. This is Heather Vickery. You have tuned into the Brave Files podcast. What a great decision you made today. I am so delighted to have you here. Hey, if you are somebody who wants to really step out of fear and into bravery, how about you come and join us in our private Facebook collective, Brave on Purpose? It's totally free, and it's an incredible network of people who are really trying to leverage their fear into intentional bravery. Because what we know for sure is that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger, we win bigger, and it's contagious. All you have to do is head on over to Facebook, search Brave on Purpose, answer three little questions, and then you're in. I look forward to seeing you there. Today, I'm talking with artist and recovering perfectionist, Carrie Brummer, about overcoming obstacles by learning to let go and trust the process. Carrie urges each of us to find our own creative voice despite societal expectations and challenges. You know, one of my favorite takeaways from this conversation is that we can all learn to appreciate our time and energy more than we value the outcome of our work. It's that age-old saying, right, that it's really in the journey, not the destination. All in all, we hope that you learn to love yourself, the way you do things, and the choices you make by understanding why you're making them and why they matter. If you're a recovering perfectionist or hope to one day become one, or know somebody in that boat, you are going to want to tune in. So grab a cup of coffee or tea or champagne or whatever gets you excited and buckle up for an awesome interview.
Persistence, trust, and art.
This is Heather Vickery, and you're listening to The Brave Files, stories from people living courageously. When we choose bravely in big and small ways, it powerfully elevates our lives. I hope these stories connect with you and encourage you to embrace bravery in every possible way, day after day. Together, we can build a movement of courageous living that enriches both our lives and our communities. And if you enjoy the show, I ask you to please share it with others. Maybe think of someone who you want to choose bravely right alongside you. Thanks for tuning in. Now here's the show. Hi, everybody. Welcome to The Brave Files. I'm very happy to have you here with me today. Today's guest says that art is about our human state of constant imperfection, which is beautiful. And Carrie Brummer has built her life and business around helping others tap into their inner artist. She's traveled the world and shown her work in some of the most incredible spaces on earth. But mostly, Carrie reminds us that the mess and imperfection in our lives is normal, beautiful, and creative. Carrie, welcome to The Brave Files.
Thank you for having me today.
I'm really excited to have you here. I love what you do. It's funny, I consider myself an artist that's not artistic. Like, I'm super creative, but I can't draw or paint or...
Well, we'll get to that.
All right. I appreciate that. So why don't you let our listeners know a little bit about who you are and your background and how this passion for art came to be your thing?
Sure. I have had art in my life since I was a child. My mom is a huge dabbler, and she's done everything from weave baskets to paint on glass to paint in oils. And her interest in creativity and the arts really fostered my own and gave me all this fuel and curiosity about the arts.
Cool.
So that was kind of a starting point for me, is having this example in my mother of exploring materials and playing and exploring. And then paired with that, I have a father who is very driven and ambitious, and I think he was a recovering perfectionist, if not just a perfectionist himself. And I'm pretty sure that combination kind of led me down some of the path that I'm on, and part of what's motivated my current work, because I was such a perfectionist as a child. My mom had to make conference meetings during my elementary school years with teachers to say, if she gets anything less than a perfect mark, I'm concerned with how she responds.
Oh,
and
wow.
I don't know how to handle it. So my perfectionism started at a very young age, and it bled into all parts of my life. art included. And I felt like I had to meet a certain standard of success, but I was also trying to deal with my desire to keep art in my life and also navigate family pressures of, well, how will you make money or earn a living with art? Because every parent that I ever taught, I taught high school briefly, and that was a common conversation and talking point. You know, that's part of our culture.
So,
that kind of led me, that was all the kind of background and foundational experience that pushed me into this world of, well, how do I find my voice? Do I have enough skill? Am I ever going to be good enough? What does that mean? And I decided to teach art because it felt like a safe, financially secure path.
That makes sense.
I knew I'd have a salary. I knew I'd have some holiday time that I could either do more work or I could dedicate to my art making. So it really felt like I was kind of meeting the expectations of my family, but also allowing myself to make. At the same point in time, I had come out of university. I had done well in school, and my degree was in art and art history. But as soon as I left, my skill dropped dramatically. And I just felt like, you know, we were told this whole time that you should have a unique voice, and they have very clear kind of understanding and expectation of what, you know, quote unquote, good art should look like. And I just felt like no matter what I did, it wasn't enough, and I couldn't seem to do that. So I was teaching these high school students how to draw and paint and do all of these things and encouraging their creativity, and yet also battling this inner really turmoil in some ways of, will I ever be good enough? And really, for everyone listening, it's not just about art. When we have perfectionist issues, it usually kind of expresses itself more strongly, perhaps in one vein or something we care about most.
Yeah.
But really, this permeates all of the choices we make in our life.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And I will still try. One of my favorite things to do, it's actually meditative to me, is to go to our, what do they call it? Where you bring your own liquor and then you can paint.
Oh, yeah. Like a wine and paint.
Yeah. And my kids love it too. I actually have a painting that I made of poppies on my office wall, which is not fabulous, but I did do it. So
that's awesome. Good for you.
Yeah. Thank you. And I can go in and do that, and it feels like I've taken a nap when I come out, which I know is not the case for everybody, but all I focus on is the painting. And it crowds out all the other stuff. And so it just feels like a little bit of a mental break for me personally.
Yeah. And art has always been part of that for me. And yet also having this drive to be successful and wanting to be the best at whatever I do, sometimes, you know, I'd have this battle. There'd be afternoons where I'd get into a flow state and paint and not care about the outcome and really just enjoy myself in the moment. And then there are other days where I'd see that work and be like, what am I doing? And like, am I wasting all these materials? Like, why can't I get better? And I felt so frustrated by it. And this perfectionist background and kind of attitude and point of view pushed me to try harder and harder and almost try to control things more. And it made me really tight in the work itself.
Well, and art is so much, from where I sit, is so much about not being in control. It's like just being in flow, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You talk about, and I know you help folks, and I loved the artist archetype quiz on your website.
Thank you.
Can you explain? Yeah, you're welcome. Can you explain what that is and how it helps people?
Sure. Basically, I started my online community space for adults who either have explored art or have wanted to, but have been afraid to because of some of that kind of perfectionist cultural communication of teachers or family telling them that's a waste of their time or that they'll never be any better than they are. Those kinds of everyone has a story like that. I can't tell you how many people, when I say I'm an artist, approach me then with some kind of story of essentially trauma of how someone told them they could never do this thing that they have a love for. So that's kind of a background on how, who might be drawn to the community. And so for that reason, as I got to know more and more people who joined and signed up for courses, I realized that there were kind of four groupings of creative types. And now I would say there are five, I need to add a fifth one, that seem to be drawn to my community space and my message. And I was like, how can I help I have so many resources at this point because I've written so many posts and done so many tutorials. How can I help them actually find and fine tune their experience and resources, you know, so that they're not spending hundreds of hours researching, trying to figure out what's best for them as a creative.
Yeah.
So I made this quiz as a way to help them go, oh, okay, I'm a many media explorer. I really do resonate with that label. I have lots of art supplies. I could probably run my own little art supply shop at this point. And I love dabbling. So what's next for me? What's, you know, do I feel like I want to find a unique voice and kind of narrow my focus? Or do I want to really embrace the play in my life? So I give them that opportunity then to look at themselves through that lens and offer resources to support them.
I love that. I think it's so great. And you really believe you, when I said I'm creative, but I'm not an artist, you were like, we'll talk about that. So you really believe that everybody is an artist.
I believe everyone has the capability and an ability to develop skill. And when a lot of people say that they're not an artist, what I actually hear as kind of another kind of quiet conversation is I can't draw.
I can't draw though.
Yeah.
I really
well,
can't.
Because you haven't been taught. And that's part of the misunderstanding, right? Is, you know, our especially in North America, our school systems do not teach drawing. I taught overseas in Dubai and I had quite a few students from South Korea. Their curriculum includes draftsmanship in elementary school. So all those kids would show up to my classes and be way more advanced. And that's part of why sometimes there is a cultural assumption or stereotype saying, for example, Asians are better at art. But in fact, South Korean students have training in drawing, which is why, as a whole, if they had schooling there, or if anyone had schooling there, they would likely be better, so to speak, at art.
That is cool that that's included and expected in the classes.
Yeah, it's so smart. There's so much value to drawing in general. And because of my education background, I really see it as this foundational. It's a way to build confidence and know, okay, even if I want to paint in an abstract manner, I'm doing it because I know I want to, not because I'm worried I'm not good enough at doing something realistically.
I love that. I really love that. I think that's super, super, super cool. You have toured and presented your work in places like the Kennedy Arts Center and the Smithsonian. What was that experience like?
That was actually one of the first moments in my life where I really had a sense of reward of letting go. And that's why one of my words is trust. So I was teaching high school on Cape Cod in Massachusetts, you know, feeling a bit of an imposter because I was worried about my skill level and not really finding my voice. And I started getting these massive headaches that would not go away. And I finally went to the ER because it was getting so bad. I lost loads of weight. I couldn't go outside in the sunlight. And come to find out, I actually had a mass on my pituitary gland.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I was told, and this was in my mid to early 20s. So I was told that they didn't know what it was, but they had to go in and get it out and biopsy it so I could know what was going on. It could be cancer. It could be benign. They have no idea until they go in, and that the surgery was so dangerous that I could go blind.
Wow.
I could have lifelong hormone replacement therapy if I survived, or I might not just survive because there are major arteries nearby, or because of, you know, the nature of the procedure, I might not wake up.
Wow. A lot to
Yeah.
And it's like one of those, you don't really have a choice, right? Because
nope.
You couldn't continue to live the way you were living. And
nope.
Also your life was at risk either way. That's a lot.
So this ties to the Smithsonian and
yeah.
the Kennedy Center. So,
okay. Yeah.
So basically in the days before that surgery, I really let go. It was like the first time in my life, I'm like, well, I can't control this. I have no say over the outcome. What do I want to do right now? I want to paint. So I went to my sister's home and all my family kind of showed up there in support, and they were all nervous and pacing around, and I just couldn't handle that energy. So I hid in my sister's basement and I got out canvases and little Miss Perfectionist plan everything to, you know, the nth degree. I just started painting on blank canvases. I had a mirror. I had images and diagrams from the surgery I was about to have. And I just started playing and did two self-portrait pieces and just let go. And I had so much fun. They came really fast to me. And I just thought, this might be the last time I can paint. Even if I survive, I might be blind.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
I'm just doing this because I love it and I'm not going to care about the outcome. So fast forward through the surgery, I was very fortunate. It was something called a Rothke's cleft cyst, which lots of people are born with and don't even know because it never grows big enough to be a problem. And they only had to collapse it. It's kind of weird, but, and they go through your nose, so they didn't have to break open my skull or anything, which is also really good news.
Really good news. But you went in thinking that they may have to crack open your skull.
They told me from the beginning, the surgery was likely going to be through my sinus cavity.
Okay, because
of the location of the pituitary. So initially I had the panic though, cause that's, I mean, you're going to shave my hair and I'm not, my skull's going to have a hole and you know,
I have a friend, a local mom in the neighborhood who just had a non-cancerous tumor on her brain and had to have brain surgery. And I mean, and they did have to crack open her skull, and it's quite a traumatic life experience. So I'm grateful that that didn't have to be your story.
Yeah, me too. So, I mean, recovery was pretty easy. I mean, I woke up and I felt better than I did when I went to sleep because I didn't have a constant ending, never ending headache that made me feel sick. So, you know, the whole surgery was a huge success. And as I was recovering and going back to work, I stumbled upon some art competitions that my work literally seemed made for.
Awesome.
And I was like, well, I made them. Why not apply? And I placed as a finalist, and part of the winning, so to speak, of being a finalist in this group show was that you would have a 2-year tour of your artwork across the United States in assorted galleries. And those spaces included for, at the time, Smithsonian and the Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts.
That is really cool. Like life goals, right?
Yes, exactly.
So I get the idea that when you think perhaps your life may be ending or altered drastically, that you can create with abandon. No risk involved, right?
Right.
But were you able to carry that feeling with you once you came out of surgery and you knew everything was going to be fine and you didn't have this crazy recovery period?
I'm so glad you asked that. It was a big aha moment, and it made me realize, look what happened, misachievement, you know, like wanting all of the success and feeling like that's a sign of self-worth. I got the kind of outside accolade I'd hoped for by letting go and not trying.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit of mind, you know, twist for me, being like, what? So it took some time to digest that. And I started talking about it with actually another colleague, and he was a cancer survivor. And he kind of looked at me conspiratorially and said, don't you wish you could bottle up and keep that feeling? That ability to hold on, you know, to not care in some ways and to really let go and trust. And, you know, it stays for a while, but it does, it's lingering and then it disappears, you know, it fades. So I have touch points in my life and there's definitely ebb and flow. I mean, the perfectionism I don't think will ever fully go away, but I do now identify as a recovering perfectionist. And I know that story and that moment and finding meaning in all of those things for myself has really helped me, you know, be reminded when I feel those kind of perfectionist negative self-talk showing up in my life, I can go, wait a minute, how have you been rewarded in your life from this behavior?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question. And it works in all the ways. By being anxious or being a perfectionist, how have you actually been rewarded? By letting go and trusting the process and having divine detachment to the results of things, how did that serve you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I dig that a lot. It's cool. Carrie, what would you say as you've gone through this process of stepping out of perfectionism as much as possible, feeling like maybe your life was about to end or change, to going to where you are, helping other people tap into their inner artist, what's been the biggest struggle?
For a long time, it was figuring out the path to doing that.
What
is the venue? What is the format? How am I going to make that space to do it? So initially after the surgery, I knew I wanted a big change in my life. And all of a sudden I felt braver because I'm like, well, if I survive that, doing, you know, whatever obstacle in my early 20s that came along, I'm like, well, if it's not brain surgery, that became a joke in our family.
Right. Absolutely. I love that so much.
So that's part of why I ended up moving overseas. So I found the curriculum that I taught on Cape Cod in Massachusetts was an international curriculum. So a lot of teachers were like, Carrie, you're already trained in this. You're in your early 20s. This is the best time to go travel. So I went to a job fair and I found a job in Dubai, United Arab Emirates, to teach high school art. And I jumped. I went all in. So I moved there and I stayed there for 6 years. And ended up actually applying to be assistant principal while I was there. I have a master's in education as well. And I thought that was going to be the path to reaching and serving more people through art, supporting art education and teachers and learning. And again, all of this too, like that's part of my path for perfectionism. Really, all of this is about trying to help people let go of that and be who they are, really, and really celebrate that. So I thought that was the path and I was doing it. And it was so stressful. I loved the job. I'm so glad I took it, but it was a really, really stressful year. And unrelated to my brain surgery, I actually also have a condition called ulcerative colitis, which is a form of intestinal bowel disease. More people know of Crohn's disease than they know of ulcerative colitis, but it's similar. And so it can be very stress-induced. And unfortunately, I just went into full sick mode that year because the job was so stressful. So I was like, okay, I thought this was the path. I thought this was my means of serving people and helping them let go of perfectionism and really supporting the arts. But what is going on? So I was sitting in the office with the principal who I loved working with, and we were going through a really tough discipline issue. And I looked at him and I said, you know, I'd never give this up. I'd never quit. But I really wish this was taken out of my hands. And no joke, within 2 hours, I had a phone call from my then fiance, now husband, and he said, I just got a job transfer offer to Muscat, Oman, which is which is a country adjacent to the United Arab Emirates. And I just felt this weight off my shoulders and chills over my whole body. And I went, this is it. I'd been dabbling with blogging as another format to communicate my passion and interest in the arts and this whole issue around perfectionism. And I thought, I'd been toying with the idea, like people are kind of, you know, using this as a platform and a means to make money and teach online. Maybe that's my thing, but that seems scary to me. And I was like, the assistant principal thing seems more, again, secure. So once that happened, I knew I needed to try to take the leap and move online because that would let me reach more people. So that really was the moment that I said, okay, time for that next step. And I haven't looked back since.
That is so great. I love it. What, you know, the universe really does conspire for us in our favor. I believe that so, so deeply. If you were to give the listeners one tip to sort of tap into their creativity, and also maybe if you could share with us why you think it's important to do so, even if you don't consider yourself a creative person.
Mm. That's a great question. There's research by a man named Dr. Stuart Brown. I believe he's a psychologist. He has a book called Play. And essentially, he did some...
I have that book on my bookshelf right now.
Oh, do you? Excellent.
I was like, wait, is that the book I have? And I looked over and it is.
So he did some research and he found a clear relationship between lack of play in the lives of children and later violent acts of crime as adults.
Oh, snap. I obviously haven't read the book yet.
Yeah. When I read that, I knew all these things, right? Being a teacher, talking with parents, seeing students go through this journey, knowing how culture communicates all of a sudden that this isn't important anymore and you need to grow up. You know, I heard parents even say those things to their students in meetings, right? And yet I also had parents confess to me they were told those things and had shame or guilt or a sense of grief or loss around it, right? So I knew this was part of the culture, right?
Yeah.
And yet, if we continue to have play in our lives, we're healthier, happier human beings, and we function better in society.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's fantastic. So what's one tip, resource people can use to sort of begin to dive in this space?
It's really hard when we want to, you know, again, when we think about drawing or making art, for example, if that's your, you know, interest in terms of creative expression, it can be really hard if you're like, okay, I'm going to draw a person, you know, I think starting small and, and allowing yourself play. So I think getting like a small sketchbook, something that's not very big, and having some colored pencils or a favorite art material, even markers, and just starting with doodling and saying, you know what, I'm going to let myself doodle. because it shouldn't have to be about the product, which is part of that whole perfectionist tie-in as well, right?
Yeah.
It's, you know, for some people, coloring is a wonderful release. Well, if you love to color, why do you have to do anything else with your art? Why can't you just color? And I really want people, especially adults, to feel this permission, because in some ways I think we're the most blocked group of creatives because we're so ingrained with our behaviors and beliefs and mindset, and we get into our routines and the way we run our lives, that even if we have this inkling or desire, you know, people say, well, then what are you going to do with it? Well, we don't ask people what they're going to do with their golfing game. We don't ask people what they're going to do with their gardening. So why does art have to be something that's career or professionally based or something you have to sell?
I love that. Yeah, I totally love that. A good friend and a client of mine hosted an event in early November called the Creativity Conference. Mm. And she brought, I think there were, I want to say nine, I don't know if that's right, different creativity leaders. And I happen to be one of them. I led a gratitude circle. So creativity in all sorts of different ways.
Exactly.
And people got to go to three different sessions and try new things. And I was put in as a speaker. I just sort of went where there weren't as many people so that everybody could go where they wanted to go. And I was put in a create your own coloring book session.
Oh, how fun.
Yeah, I was like, wait, I don't want to be here. I can't draw, right? I don't know what I'm doing. But I was like, okay, here I am. I'm gonna play with this. And the biggest takeaway for me was I did do it. So I was like, I can't do this, and I can. And maybe it didn't look like the teacher's coloring book pages, but
right.
I did do it, and it felt good to tackle that. And then I challenged myself the next time I was on an airplane, which was just a couple days later, to sort of channel my energy in that space. And I created some coloring book pages for myself, and then I colored them in. And the woman sitting next to me commented. She was like, oh, those are so cool. And I told her how I learned about it. And then I went to a conference, and I sort of color doodled throughout the conference anything that was a great idea or a quotable thing. I had a particular color or design. So when I went back to look at my notes, it was so much more engaging to go
yes.
back and look and take action on.
And there's research too that shows that doodling actually helps us better retain information, especially in like separately if you're in a corporate life, for example, especially in meetings that can feel really dry. People are much more likely to take away information and remember things if they doodle at the same time.
I think that's great. It's so fun. So it was a fun challenge for me, and it's nice to sort of tap into that space. I love it. Do you believe, Carrie, that this work you're doing is brave?
That's such a good question. You know, I've been thinking about the word brave and what it means to me. And for me, it means letting go. It feels brave to me to let go and trust because of my desire to control and achieve and strive. So now that I'm doing the work that I'm doing, and I feel like I've found the path and the means to do it, it doesn't feel brave anymore. It feels like taking the leap and taking risk for me of letting go and trusting my journey and knowing, you know, having a knowing that it will work out somehow.
Yeah.
That's the part that has some fear around it that
sure.
requires some bravery.
I would agree that does, it takes a lot of guts and bravery and courage to push past that. I mean, that's my whole business, right?
Mm-hmm.
As a professional coach and a speaker, even as an author, to help you leverage your fear into intentional bravery, because it's my belief, and in fact, it's more than a belief. I know that when we choose bravely on purpose, we choose bigger. And that bigger is contagious.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what I feel like. I think some people just think, want to pat me on the head and go, oh, Carrie, you're cute. But I passionately believe that, you know, it doesn't have to be art, but if people feel permission culturally to engage in their creative interests and really had permission their whole lives to do that, how different would this world look?
Yeah.
How many people are some kind of blocked creative that put people, because it's people who are blocked creatives who inadvertently put others down and make them feel small about their work.
Yeah.
It's people who didn't take the leap and wish that they did that, you know, say the wrong thing and trigger us, right? And if we could all just really let go and trust and lift each other up, you know, because all of our paths are different. I just, I can't imagine what that world would look like. And yet I just feel so much more possibility, hope, and tolerance in that kind of imagined future.
I'm with you on that. I love that so much. I'm curious because I know my listeners are going to want to know what sort of daily rituals or practices do you have that helps you stay in this energy of flow and creativity?
I am a very routine-oriented human.
Me too.
I think part of that's also, I went from being a student to teaching in schools for somewhere between 9 and 12 years. So, you know, most of my life up until recently, 7 years ago or so, I had been in a school system where I knew holidays a year in advance. I knew everything about my schedule, and even your school day is very regimented. So I find starting my day and ending my day with some kind of open and close, and having that in repetition has really been good for me. So I have a 70-pound puppy named Banner who Aww. I walk twice a day, and he and I start the morning with kind of a 40-minute walk together, and then we end the day as well with a similar amount of walking time, and having that walking time has been good for me. I don't bring a phone. I don't bring any tech. I just walk outside Smart. With him and enjoy the space. And then in the evenings, I usually do either like a 5 to 10 minute meditation before I go to sleep.
I love that. Do you have a gratitude practice?
I am inconsistent in it, but I do.
Okay. So I have written now 3 books and gratitude journals. I'm a big fan of that because so much of what you've talked about is rooted in that understanding Yes. that you're not alone, understanding that you have gifts and beauty surrounding you and that you don't have to get it right. Just appreciate it and roll with it.
Yeah. For me, it's always been tied to mindfulness practice too, because I have For sure. been meditating for a long time. And I just, that's one reason I don't bring my phone on those walks. I like to be in the moment, and I love to see the walk through my dog's eyes because he is still so young and playful, and he's just so joyful in the morning, and I'm barely conscious. And I'm like, kid, I wish I had some of your energy in the morning. It it sets me up for the right kind of mindset for the day. And then if I don't journal it, and I journal a lot before I go to sleep, and if I don't actually journal and write out the gratitudes, what I try to do is before bed, just lay there and think about 3 to 5 things that I'm grateful for and really sit with them. Cause that's something I didn't understand before about gratitude. I just kind of make my little checkbox of checks. Like, I did this today, check, and not really sit with the gratitude that I was thinking it. Yeah. So I've been trying to sit with the feeling and kind of re-experiencing the thing that I feel gratitude for to really help me sit with it.
I love that. There is the magic really happens in, for me, and what science has taught us is that getting it out. So out of your mind, even if you verbalize it or write it down, but then understanding why am I grateful for this thing? What had to conspire to allow me to have this thing to be grateful for? And how can I do it again?
Yeah.
That's cool. Carrie, how do you, there's so much I think in your life that I'm hearing you share that feels successful, and we all define success differently, but how do you celebrate success?
This is still a hard one for me.
With perfectionists.
Yeah, it really is. So for example, this weekend, as of this recording, I just flew back from Ottawa, Canada, where I had my very first solo exhibition. Which is like a huge leap and step forward for me in my own artist practice, and something I'm super proud of. And I had to go, well, how am I going to celebrate this? I mean, I was definitely celebrating in the moment during the opening. And I was like, how can I honor the effort and time it's taken for me to reach that point and really, really celebrate it? So I've consciously booked time for the next 2 weeks where I don't really have anything I have to do. And I'm going to try, we're going to see how well I do, but I'm trying to say, okay, let's only do the things that really feel joyful for the next 2 weeks as part of that celebratory nature, instead of what's the next project? What else do I need to wrap up? What should I be doing? Because that's what happens, is I immediately like try to wrap up the project I'm on and think about the next goal and the next step. So that achievement drive of mine is still something I think I'll always navigate, but at least now I have awareness, and I'm trying to actively put into planning processes and systems opportunities to say, okay, well, this has to be, I have to schedule my success time, celebration time, right? I need to make space to honor this, because I won't by my nature.
You won't do it otherwise. I love that. I really value that you shared that because I don't know that anyone's done that on this show before. It takes a lot of practice and hard work to build a habit of instantly being able to stop and savor. And for a lot of folks, that's how they celebrate. I'm just going to savor this. I'm going to breathe in and I'm going to feel it. And I'm going to be so excited. At the time that we're recording this, and it's not airing for a few months, today is the launch day of my book, Grow Grateful. And I haven't yet just sat with how exciting this is and the buzz around and all the wonderful people who have shared, but it will be part of my day today. So thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I get to ask one of my favorite questions that I just think is so crucial and important in our world today. What is your favorite charitable organization to support?
I recently discovered an organization called RIP Medical Debt. And because my life has been filled with assorted health issues, as I've shared a bit today, I realized, especially in my 20s, that surgery, and I think it was in 2006 or 2007, at the time, I believe just the surgery itself, not everything else, was $90,000.
Wow.
If I had not had the privilege of having healthcare through my school, I would have been in my early 20s and likely had to go bankrupt because I was a school teacher without much means, and especially just starting out and with student loan debt. So there are so many people out there who are not as fortunate as I've been with my health issues and don't have health insurance. And so they have this medical debt, and RIP medical debt lets you buy the debt of others so that collection agencies don't. And then you cancel out their debt. And when collection agencies buy the debt, they buy it for pennies on the dollar and then chase you down for your money.
Of course.
That's how they earn money, right?
Yeah.
So you know, you can spend very little money comparably to what the debt amount might be and save their lives.
That is so cool. I had no idea this organization existed. They're going to be our charity of the week. But I know so many people who are fighting for quality healthcare access for everybody here in the United States and in countries that don't have it as well. But it's clearly a real issue here in the U.S. So I love to know that they exist, and listeners, as always, go check them out. If there's something that you can do to support, share, whatever it is, do that, because this is a really easy, actionable way to make a big difference in somebody else's life. And the hope is that, you know, we rise up together as a community, a global community of people. So thank you for that, Carrie.
You're welcome.
What are your three words? Will you share them with us one last time?
Sure. They are persistence, trust, and art.
I love them. I think they're really beautiful words, and you've done a nice job of sharing why you picked them throughout the conversation. So that is fantastic. I've loved getting to know you. I am inspired by what you do and excited to push myself from a creative and artistic standpoint. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you, Heather, for letting me share my story and promote this message of kind of anti-perfectionism.
Yeah, absolutely. I know plenty of my listeners could use the anti-perfectionism movement in their corner. So all of you out there, I encourage you to tap into that inner creative self that's there. Even if you've never been, like I said, a creative or an artist, it allows you to see life from a completely new perspective. And it really is such a gift. I also hope that you value this podcast as an expression of art and creativity. We do it with deep love. And as an artist in this space, I cannot do it without your support and help on Patreon. So if you're not already a part of our Brave community on Patreon, please go visit patreon.com/bravefiles and find a level that works for you and join our Brave community. We can't do it without you, and we're having an awful lot of fun. Remember, you can give us a call and let us know what you think about this episode, ideas for future ones, or anything you want to share. Let us know how you're choosing bravely. Call at 312-646-0205. This is Heather Vickery reminding you today and always to go out and choose bravely. Today's show is brought to you by Audible. Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook with a 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/thebravefiles and browse their unmatched selection of audio programs. Download a title of your choice for free and start listening. It's that simple. Just head to audibletrial.com/thebravefiles. You've been listening to The Brave Files, stories from people living courageously. To learn more about the show, find our show notes, or get some great bonus content, visit thebravefilespodcast.com. And we'd love to know what you think. You can give us a call at 312-646-0205. Let us know your thoughts on the episode, the show in general, or maybe share with us how you're out choosing bravely. This episode is brought to you by Vickery & Co. Success Coaching, coaching that helps you maintain a life well-lived and a business well-run. Learn more at vickeryandco.com. Our music is produced by Matt Lewis. Follow him on Instagram at Matt M. Music or visit his website, theunionband.com. We couldn't do any of this without our extraordinary audio engineer, Andrew Olson. Learn more about him and check out his work at findandrewolson.com. And special thanks to our associate producer, Kim Statler. I'm your host and executive producer, Heather Vickery. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next week.